an opportunity to put together and talk about our faith, and this is what we're going to be addressing today. We read in Hebrews chapter 11 is a description of the faith in action, and it's preserved there for us so that we are going to receive the lessons of that the Hebrew writer wanted us to have. He talked about how God's people have always had faith. And in this chapter, in chapter 11, there are several verses that are devoted to the example of Abraham, and who is called the father of the faithful. That was before the verses we read of Moses. Genesis chapter 16 tells us that he believed in the Lord. So how are you faithful? You're faithful by your belief and your conviction and your consistent application of that. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 8 says, by faith Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, he obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. And that's what each of us did when we decided to obey and follow God. We really didn't know where it was going to lead. We still don't, but we pray that we can see progress along that way, that God reveals to us where we're needed and prepares us for each step of that of the way as we go along. The author's purpose wasn't intended to prove that Abraham had had faith. You know, the readers already knew that. But to illustrate two points, and illustrate the life of faith, what it was like in each of these people that we read about in Hebrews chapter 11, and encourage the readers, or we as the listeners, to have a similar faith and to be as committed and consistent as he was. We're going to be, the people in Hebrews were being pressured to leave Christianity and go back to a faith that they were more familiar with. They were told how superior this was and how that had served its time. The purpose tonight is to do the same as those authors, is to illustrate lives of faith and encourage you to follow those same examples. And if we can do that, well then, I've achieved what I wanted to do and what each of us really strive to accomplish as we are going along. So the topic was faith of Rahab. But we're going to back up a little bit and start with a promise that was given, that all these events that we're going to be talking about led up to all these events. In chapter 15, as you read above, in verses 13 through 21, we're told of the promise of Jehovah to Abram, the father of the nation of Israel. God recognized the faithfulness of Abram and also knew of his concerns and his worries. He recognizes our faith. He also knows of our concerns and worries and always has the answer for us. He spoke to Abram there in chapter 15 and says, fear not, Abram, I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great. Abram was concerned about his childlessness. But God had revealed to him at that time that he would make of him a great nation that would be greater than the stars he could see at night, greater than the numbers of that he could imagine. God made a promise to him that his descendants would be more numerable than those stars. Well, hundreds of years later, as God had told Abraham, Abraham, his descendants left the land of Canaan, that land where he was, that they had received, and went into Egypt. And as the promise said, know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and then will be servants there. However, after a while, conditions changed, and they were afflicted for 400 years, again, as God had foretold. Next, we read in Exodus about the one-sided battle of Jehovah over the gods of Egypt. Each of the miraculous events that we refer to as the 10 plagues over Egypt demonstrated the power of God over any other so-called god, and showed that he would overcome them, and that if we trusted in him as they were told to do, God would then fight for them. After the last plague, the death of the firstborn in Egypt, Israel left and was provided with plunder by the people of Egypt. But I will bring judgment on the nations that they serve, and afterwards they shall come out with great possessions. That part was fulfilled in that. Well, they crossed the geographical barrier of the Red Sea by the divine hand of God. They were formed and sustained into a nation in the wilderness and shaped that and prepared for the task ahead. And so when we read, and they shall come back here in the fourth generation, That's where they were. They were prepared. And in Numbers, during the latter years of the journey, the people of Israel, directed by God, conquered the mighty armies of two powerful kings of the Amorites, Sidon and Og. And they put to death every man, woman, and child, and burned the cities because the iniquity of the iniquity that was not ready at that time, the sins of those people had been completed at that time. So then on that day, as we continue to read in Genesis 15, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham. We read in Deuteronomy, after 40 years, at the end of the wandering and the journey in the wilderness, that Moses died. The Lord placed Joshua in command. That's getting us up to the time we're talking about now. He was to lead God's people into the promised land. In that part of the promise that says, to your offspring I give this land, from the rivers of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. In the book of Joshua, after mourning for Moses, God directed Joshua to lead the nation, the people of Israel, into the promised land, the land promised to Abraham and given to his descendants, to begin conquering the land that would become what we call, you know, the nation of Israel. And so he said, to your offspring I give this land, from the rivers of Egypt to the great river of the Euphrates, the land of the Canaanites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, Girgashites, and the Jebusites. So we have some lessons to learn, and this is the emphasis that we have here. We learn that God is faithful to all of his commitments. We learn that everything he promises will happen as he says it will. And we learn that those who believe in his words and follow his commands will be blessed by him. With that bedrock, with those lessons, those messages, we step into an understanding and meeting this woman, Rahab of Jericho. We listen to news, we listen to current events, and they do concern us if we really pay attention to them. Well, the people of the ancient world were just as interested in the news and events of their worlds, if not far more so than we are. News of a powerful army heading toward your city, conquering all who resisted them in miraculous ways, would bring fear to any man, any city, any people. We could draw at least two lessons from those events. Again, God is faithful in his commitments, and everything he promises will happen. And those who believe in his word and follow his commands will be blessed by God. That is the promise that carried over into the Hebrew people as they were getting ready to take the land. Well, let's understand why Jehovah told Israel to wipe out the Canaanites. One needs to understand the Canaanite religion and customs. I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but give you the summary. At the heart of the Canaanite religion was sex and all of its perversions. The land was polluted with indescribable immorality. They were hopelessly lost and incurable. God had given them the 400 years that we talk about during that time to have a chance to turn around, to do many things toward it. They had refused. They were hopelessly lost. God had decided that, as told in Genesis chapter 15 and verse 16, their iniquity was now complete. And being an honest and honorable God, what he says he's going to do, he's going to do, even if it means the destruction of people and his creation. Think of the events back in earlier and of the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, the sin that was there and the destruction that was necessary. To illustrate the sins that were there, I've got the passages on your outline, but refer to the warnings that God gave his people in Deuteronomy and in Psalm and in Leviticus, so that they were not to participate in the evil sins of the Gentiles in the areas that they were to conquer. So now we meet the city of Jericho. Jericho was one of the principal cities of this idol worship. It was especially devoted to Ashtoreth, which is the goddess of the moon, also the goddess of fertility, the goddess of war. These are the things they worshipped. These are the things that patterned and got, you know, you put their lusts into their faith and their religion. Here was centered all that was the vilest, the most degrading things that mankind is doing in the name of religion in Canaan. At the same time, Jericho was a very powerful city in this area. their deity Ashtaroth, you know, being the goddess of war, you know, set the stage for them. Well, it's clear that Rahab was perceptive and was intelligent and well-informed, because as we get to know her in Joshua chapter 2, she brings these things to mind. The conditions that she spoke of was all the inhabitants were fearful of this people. Just imagine a massive army, so many times more numerous than those even in the population of your city, faced and ready to come, who had been invincible on every challenge they've had so far. Their hearts are just ready to melt. You can't stand and fight if you've already given up in internally. They had no spirit left in any manner, she said. And they had to be doubting their own gods, because they've seen gods of the Amorites and other places totally defeated and totally destroyed. So Rahab was a Gentile. Let's get to know her. She's living in a Gentile land, participating in the daily practices and probably the religion of this Gentile practice. Perhaps she was an innkeeper. She's described it as a harlot and a prostitute. And she's also a seller of flax or clothing for other uses. We naturally hear such things in our 21st century context, but let's just suffice it to say, without trying to justify our things, our attitudes with them and there, just understand that she was like us, a sinner in need of salvation. After hearing evidence of the power and the reality of the God of Israel, she rejected local gods and believed enough in this new God to really place her own life at risk. Here she's identified the spies that were there. She hid them and came up with a plausible story that was ready to deceive the king's agents. Again, you can read this in Joshua chapter 2. Rahab didn't deny that she'd entertained the men. She deceived the city soldiers in defense of the Hebrew men who were in the land to spy. And she said, well, they left at dusk, when it would be more difficult for anyone to identify whether they'd seen them or not. The agents didn't dare risk stopping to search her place, because at the time of day, it was a good chance that they might get away. Rahab was a maker of flax, or at least someone who prepared that. It says that she hid them upstairs in the flax. Well, you think of what flax is, a very reedy plant, and they need the fibers in order to make fabric. And the way they do it is they put it in rotting cesspools of water and take that out, and then, you know, until it breaks down and decomposes and dries out. So, you're going to hide, where are you going to hide them? You know, in this area where apparently the king and others were familiar with her location. Put them up on the roof, put this, whatever it might have been, slimy stuff over them. They decided, let's just go on. You know, they've got to be there. So in her wisdom or her thoughtfulness or quick thinking, she found a place that people weren't going to want there. As time, so she had this presence of mind, and she prepared the heart. Them. This is the person that we're talking about. Rahab heard and believed the message and the miracles done by the God of Israel. Now, every time we say we believe in Jesus Christ, we believe in the miracles, we're doing so on faith. I doubt that she had seen these events, but she heard convincing evidence of God. This God of the Hebrews drying up the Red Sea, you know, 40 years or so before, and the people walking by. Believe me, news traveled there as fast as the electronic means that it does now. They knew who these people were. It wasn't like they just appeared overnight and no one knew. And we're talking about the numbers, the great numbers. So we got them on the other side of the river. She knew that their God had given Israel the land. She says so. I know that your God has given you this land. Finally, the Canaanite prostitute gives the two Israels other advice and tells them, once I let you down out of the wall, go to the hills and wait 3 days, because that's about as long as the soldiers will continue to search for you before they give up, and then cross over to your people. Well, she, as far as it was revealed, is the first Gentile convert to Judaism. We've got somebody who, by the evidence there, rejects her God and accepts the risk of this new God, and then does everything she can to support. So she was the first one there. She was also, she welcomed the spies and because of her faith, and she said, God in heaven, you have the God who is God of heaven above and earth below. and that's the one she was ready to trust. Rahab demonstrated her faith by action. James 2 tells us we demonstrate our faith, and our faith is shown by our works. The action that she did was to put herself at risk. The kings knew that, you know, the king knew and the soldiers knew that there was a likelihood that they were there. She was faced with that challenge. She decided to put it all on her trust there. And just picture something else. she extracted a promise from them that they would preserve her and her family. She cared about her family enough to make sure that, you know, she got them there. And realize again, what would you be doing in that situation? Your family saw the same evidence. I don't know what their thoughts were, but you've got people that are totally contrary and against the will of God and against this teaching. She's got to persuade them to trust her enough to come to her home during this time when the Israelites are marching around the city and then stay in there. Remember the walls fell down? You know where her house is? It's in the outer wall. So by whatever miraculous means there were, the walls fell down and her home was preserved. Now, that's a bit scary to me, thinking that all these walls crumbling by all means, and then that's people on either side of you. Whatever it might be, whatever distance it might be, her home was prepared, was preserved. And then you hear the people, all the people of the city being put to death. And you're supposed to stay there and wait. There's a lot of faith and a lot of trust that they had in that. Rahab could have indicated her home. They told her that what she's supposed to do is put a scarlet rope out and to identify her window. She could have decided, well, I want to do something else. I think a better rope that I can use to escape myself might be better. But she decided to do what she was told. Her faith led her to trust, led her to obedience. What she did there put her whole life at risk and put her in that situation, and she was rewarded for her faithfulness. Rahab's faith enabled her to turn away from her culture and her people and her religion and to the Lord. That's a pretty tough thing to do. She believed in God, she had faith in him, and she acted on her beliefs. Now, why are we telling this story? So that we will believe in God, have faith in him, and act on our beliefs. We talk about Israel. Israel honored the vows of the spies, as we read in chapter 6. Rahab's house was preserved when the wall came down, again by the hand of God. The city was utterly destroyed, and the people, except for Rahab and her family, were put to death. It also brings to mind the story of Lot being preserved when the cities where he was were destroyed. They were placed on the outside of the camp of the Hebrews for their safety. Rahab remained faithful to God and to his people, the God of the Hebrews. We read in these passages there how that brought her to that time. So Rahab is presented to us by the Hebrew writer as an example of faithfulness. And as we're going to see, it's remarkable that such a woman, a Gentile, someone who at least was in a city that was one of the more vile and polluted and immoral cities that would be, practicing to whatever degree that she did for whatever reasons, is now someone who has turned away from all that and is considered as one of the faithful and used it as an example. This wasn't any accident of faith. She was given a choice, just like you and I are, and wherever we're faced with what seems to be an impossible situation. We trust in the Lord, trust and count on him to be faithful in his promises, and we will then receive the same thing. It's an illustration of people and to all of us to then trust in him. So let's look at some verses that reveal a little bit more about Rahab next. We read in these two passages in Ruth chapter 4 and verse 20 that Amminadab, who's given a genealogy, fathered Nahshon fathered Salmon, Salmon fathered Boaz, Boaz fathered Obed, Obed fathered Jesse, and Jesse was the father of David. Now we don't have a whole lot of connection there until we're revealed a bit more in Matthew chapter 1, verse 5. And Salmon, the father of Boaz by Rahab, we see that piece of the puzzle. Boaz, the father of Obed by Ruth, we had just read about this genealogy in the book of Ruth. And Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of David the king. And who is David, the king, the father of in time? The Messiah. So the influence of this woman, because she believed, she took action and continued to trust in the Lord God, is what led us to where we are today. So her belief, she left the old world and life behind and held on to her faith in Jehovah. Action, she remained faithful to Jehovah, and then by her faithfulness is counted as the ancestor, one of the ancestors of Jesus. She trusted, she became, as time went on, a faithful wife, a mother, raised faithful sons, and perhaps, and most likely, daughters. So as we get to know more about Rahab, we see her revealed a bit more here in chapter 11 of Hebrews, verse 31. We read that by faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. Let's look at that a little bit differently. Said another way, she lived because she was obedient. So later on, as we know, we'll throw a couple greats in there. Her great-great-great-grandson, Jesus the Messiah, said in Luke chapter 6 and verse 46, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and then do what I tell you?" If we have faith, we're going to serve God. We're going to honor and trust him. What is the stipulation? We need to be obedient. We need to be faithful and trusting. So we see her belief, again, leaving the old world, her action. She protected the spies, as we talked about, was saved because of her faith in God and her trust. She demonstrated in her life by doing what she was directed to do and honored the instructions there and was faithful to that. We read again about her in James chapter 2 and verse 25. He illustrates that our justification is reliant upon our faithful works due to our belief, and offers Rahab as an example. So we have her. How are we going to be counted faithful? By putting that faith to work, by trusting. She believed, she took faithful action, and she trusted in the Hebrew God and counted him as Lord and demonstrated her faith in the ways that she did. We talked about in this. It's all right. You've got the history. You've got what brought it up. You show you that God was faithful to in his promises and brought us here. Whatever God says he will do, you can be counted on, be trusted, be honored to do so. What do we learn from Rahab? She trusted in this in God. She honored him and was faithful. What we learn then also in this message, Think of the conditions Rahab was in. She's living in a society that was immoral, an idolatrous nation, a city and a society that really was turning against all the values that we would consider righteous and just. She made choices that were sinful in her lives. She was uncertain and fearful about the surrounding events in her life. She was dealing with a daily struggle of survival, jobs, family, other pressures. Whatever she's doing, those things we know, she was selling flax and doing that. She had that job. She apparently people came to her as perhaps as an innkeeper, and then other activities of whatever she needed to do in order to provide for herself and perhaps for her family. How does that differ from us? Look at us. We're living in an immoral, idolatrous nation and city and society. Really not a lot of difference, is there? We've made choices in our lives that were sinful. We find ourselves many times uncertain and fearful about the surrounding events. And we're dealing with the daily struggles and survival, and jobs, and family, and other pressures. So when pressure comes and you've got a choice whether to decide to gather with the saints, to teach someone, to do something that puts your faith on the line, it's okay to step back because you've got all these pressures. We live in a very tough society. We live in a time where things are uncertain. Well, I've got my job, or I've got my family. I hope you can see, maybe I'm trying to be a little bit facetious there. Rahab faced so much more than what we did. We have the same struggles. We've got to show that same faith. And so with that, let's look again. Rahab we're going to compare ourselves, and I'll just ask you, you know, do we fully, you know, Rahab accepted that her gods and beliefs were not going to save her? Anything other than faith in Jehovah, faith in God, faith in the Bible and the teachings that you have here, faith in the salvation through Jesus Christ, is going to be just like her little g gods. They're not going to save you. They're not going to do anything. You've got to decide, I truly do trust. I will put my life in his hands. And said she made a choice to trust the God of the Hebrews. Ask yourself, who do we trust? Sometimes we tend to say, well, I'll do whatever it may be that is testing your faith after I get myself right, after I do this, after these conditions are right. You know, we're putting our trust in ourselves and doing that. And that's not the way to go. It will be defeated. She trusted God concerning the surrounding events. That's what we need to do. It looks pretty scary when you think of the world events. If you really get into what's happening around us, we're sort of cushioned in our own little cocoon. The news we read is whatever's the major publication or decider is fit to print. I used to work with a guy from Ireland, and he would just laugh at me. He says, the things that you see on ABC, CBS, NBC, whatever the other initials are, he says, that's just a soften. Says, do you ever want to find out what the really going on in the world? Listen to news from outside the U.S. You'll find it's a far more harsh world than what we listen to, what we think. And you might, you know, maybe you don't want to do that. Let's just stay with our own little cocoon. But it can be pretty scary once you start paying attention to things like that. But if we trust in God, no matter what's going on, God is always king. You know, that's the thing to keep in mind. Will we make a commitment to be faithful to God? Well, she did. She put it all on the line, if you will. So let's continue with lessons to be learned. And that is, God is faithful to his commitments. When God says, trust in me and I will provide for you. Trust in me and I will give you the salvation. I will bring you to me. You know that he will. Everything he promises will happen exactly as he says it will. That's why we want to read, we want to know, we want to understand his word. Those who believe in his word and follow his commands will be blessed by God. Those are the lessons, those are the messages that you need to have as your core basis there. Look at Rahab again for a moment. There's some things we can get there in the closing lessons there. Faith is the opposite of fear. In Joshua chapter 2 and verse 11, she says, as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted. There is no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heavens above and the earth beneath. She was fearful, but her faith is what gave her security. Rahab's fear could have led her to turn the spies over. I fear, you know, I've got to turn them over to the authorities. I'm not going to stand up to them. She didn't. She trusted in them, in God. Rahab made a choice of faith in the face of fear, and it led to the deliverance of her family. Challenge you and I have is the same thing, to decide to put Jesus Christ first in our lives, even before our family and friends. Now, I'll say that again. Put Jesus Christ first, even before our family and friends. How you do that is going to shape everything else, and that's going to really see the faith that you have. You only do what you truly believe, and if you truly believe that God is the God of in heavens and in the and on earth, then you will realize that he's the one that's going to help you to deal with those struggles. Faith requires action. In James chapter 2 and verse 25, we read, in the same way was not also Rahab the prostitute justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out that way? Her faith was tested in what she did, much more than what she might have thought or anything else, in what she actually did. She could have passed on helping the spies. But James says in chapter 2, verse 26, faith without deeds is dead. She put herself on the line. Your faith is going to require you to do the same. Her actions defined her faith in God. And in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 31, faith... she was a prostitute who did not perish because she was obedient. She confessed that faith. She lived that faith. She took the risk that needed to be. And without faith, it's impossible for anyone to please God. Let's look at the courage. Courage to overcome the past. In Joshua chapter 2 and verse 21, or 2 and verse 1, Joshua, the son of Nun, you know, sent two men secretly to from Shittim to the spies, or as the spies, saying, "Go and view the land in Jericho." They went and came to the house of a prostitute who was named Rahab and lodged there. Well, the Bible doesn't really hide the failings of people. They're telling us what kind of person she was. Whatever situation, you try to find other translations, it's going to come down to prostitute and harlot. That's what God identifies her as. So then she found the courage to turn away from that. Whatever is in your life, whatever sin we have, whatever baggage we have can be set aside. And look at someone who had that, living in one of the vilest cities, in the vilest cultures, in a city that was worthy of total destruction by God. In all that influence, she was able to turn away from that and become someone who was worthy of acknowledged as in the household of faith. When the city of Jericho was taken, Rahab and her family were rescued by her faith in God. God's aware of our sins and our failings. He knows our excuses, our personal justifications, and he says, trust in me. It takes courage to assume risk also, in that they were hidden on the roof. She put herself out, as we talked about, and it took great risk for that. And it takes courage to decide to change your life. In Hebrews, she sided with the Hebrew spies and left her old life, and then we can see what the results was. It takes courage in order to be faithful. And it takes love. Love of God, protected her family. In Joshua chapter 2 and verse 12, she set aside, she said, will you preserve and my family? They said, too, if you'll gather them together, we'll do that. Rahab's first concern was for them. She was unmarried, without children. She could have just saved herself. She just, protected her family. She was concerned with that. Her love of God and love for God and trust put her family at risk, and she was able to convince them that that was what they needed to do. So her faith delivered them from death. We learned the love of God led to obedience and forgiveness. She became the kind of woman that someone such as Salmon, a Jew, someone who, with the restrictions that were in the Old Testament covenant and with the Hebrew people, she was able to overcome that and show her faithfulness, and then be the kind of mother who raised other faithful men. We see that in the descendants that we have there, and we're told about in Ruth and in Matthew. First mention of Rahab was a former pagan, gave birth to a son who would be then eventually a descendant of King David and then to the Messiah. And then finally, the love of God can be felt down through generations. Her faith in God was an example to those who came after her. That's why I like that song, "Find Us Faithful." Will God find me faithful? And that passage that says, when I'm gone and someone's going through my life, will they see the one that I'm not hiding? Will they see who I really am? They'll think about the stories and the events and the illustrations of me, and I hope that leads them to be faithful by the example that I leave. God gave us the example of Rahab. She was found faithful and worthy of us talking about now, thousands of years later. We have an example in Rahab, and your descendants will be talking about you in the future too. So we have example of Rahab. Let's follow her example in faithfulness. There's nothing in this world that should deter you from your faithfulness and your obedience to God. And you're the example. You're, of all those that are your contemporary with, does Richard trust in God? Does put your name there better than mine, that person, trust in God. Your descendants, your neighbors, your friends, they're going to be able to see that same thing. You are the one who is really setting the stage for future generations. Now, there's no more Messiah's coming. The Lord has come. But each of us will have an effect in influencing our family, the course of our family. And we pray that that family, that course, will be one of faithfulness, one that will lead people to trust in God, to use us as a positive example of some, because you put your name in, was faithful. That influenced me to do such and such. Some of us are the first Christians in our family. We're hoping that the children we raise will be faithful. Their grandchildren will be faithful. Someone has to start it. You can be that one. So with that in mind, I hope the message is inspirational to you. It's one that tells you that if you remain faithful, you do what God says, He will always be faithful to His promises. And with that, I invite you to stand together and we'll sing the song that Chad's chosen.